Hi, it's Rabbi Jim Egolf. Thank you so much for joining me this week. Well, we're going to take a look through the Torah portion that is about the story of Noah. And as we go through it, we're going to talk about not just the story of Noah, but also how language affects us today, especially when we find ancient languages, how we need to embody and give language or names to all the bad people in the world, as well as some of the good ones. We're going to talk about the Phillies winning the World Series, since that's a really big deal here in Philadelphia area. And then we're going to get to, well, gosh, which paradigm do we want actually running our country? Who is it, and what are the qualities that we're looking for in any leader who we choose at this particular time? Again, I thank you so much for joining me. You can email me at rav, as in Victor, J-I-M, at AOL.com, or you can call me at 610-624-3441. Thank you for listening. Shalom. It was reported this week that a former, shall we say, Judean suburb or stronghold became the center of the archaeological world, a town called Azekah, which was in the southwestern frontier of Judea, became famous, but not for any reason that you would normally think. It didn't have a great sports facility, didn't have a World Series championship team. But it became famous this week because, well, let's just say up until this week, Azekah was about as significant as Monroeville, Alabama, which probably means absolutely nothing to you except that I grew up in a place called Monroeville, Alabama. And the fact that Harper Lee is from Monroeville, Alabama. So, this week, another piece of literature became really important because in Azekah, they found a pot shard, but not just any pot shard. This was reported in CNN. An Israeli archaeologist has discovered what he says is the earliest known Hebrew text found on a shard of pottery that dates to the time of King David from the Old Testament about 3,000 years ago. Professor Yosef Garfinkel of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem says the inscribed pottery shard, known as an ostracon, was found during excavations of a fortress from the 10th century BCE. Carbon dating of the ostracon, along with pottery analysis, dates the inscription to the time of King David, about a millennium earlier than the famous Dead Sea Scrolls, the university said. The shard contains five lines of text divided by black lines and measuring about 15 centimeters by 15 centimeters or 6 inches square. Archaeologists have yet to decipher the text, but initial interpretation indicates it formed part of a letter. It contains the roots of the words judge, slave, and king, according to the university. That may indicate it was a legal text, which archaeologists say would provide insights into Hebrew law, society, and beliefs. The researchers say that the text was clearly written by a trained scribe. The shard was discovered at the Ella Fortress in Kir Bet Kayafa, about 20 miles southwest of Jerusalem. So, we found a new oldest piece of pottery in Hebrew writing. So, what does it mean? And here I want to kind of draw us into our Torah portion for this week, because our Torah portion really begins to deal with the issue of, well, different languages. So the Torah portion is really famous because it tends to be every childhood's notion of having an ark and having this floating zoo that God told Noah to build. And everybody likes to, you know, it's really a nice story for kids because there's animals in it. But it's really an extremely terrifying story because God just kind of ends up drowning everybody else in the world. So that's the beginning part of the portion. But then later in the portion, we get to the response to the flood. And specifically, the Tower of Babel. Now, if you're thinking about it, if you live during the flood, you probably want to go build a very tall tower to escape the flood in the future. But the rabbis weren't so with that notion that, you know, just basic raw Yetzer Hara, that's R-A-H for Yetzer Hara, meaning the evil inclination, that would actually be a good reason. It has to have an embodiment. So the rabbis, when they were writing the Midrash, decided that they needed to create a villain. And they went and they created a villain by the name of Nimrod. Now, why is Nimrod such a bad guy? Well, he's one of those early kings. He's kind of undefined, which means that if you're a rabbi and you're trying to attach evil to somebody and you kind of have a bad feeling about this guy, he's really easy to do. He's really easy to make into the bad guy. So, according to the Stone Chumash, the rabbis named Nimrod as the embodiment of the great evil that caused the building of the Tower of Babel, either to escape the flood or, according to some, to assault heaven. Because you've got to get up to heaven to actually fight God. So, but in this creation of the Midrash, I get to the point where I have to ask the question, why do we need to peg success or failure upon a certain person as if they are the embodiment of the perceived curse or blessing of an entire group of people? Why do we need to have heroes such as a Benedict Arnold or a Nimrod as the embodiment of the evil of a particular action or a particular feeling or sentiment? Why is it so much easier to deal with it if you can attribute it to a person? So I want to take it to a positive first. Now, as all of you know, the Philadelphia Phillies are world champions of baseball. And in the course of playing the World Series, Cole Hamels, pitcher for the Phillies, was named MVP of the World Series. Now, I saw this, and he's a great pitcher. I saw him pitch for a while, but I have to ask the question. Did the entire World Series really ride on his shoulders? Or, should I say, his arms? His arm? You know, and if the Phillies had lost, God forbid, because we do that really well. We were the first team to get to 10,000 losses in any sports franchise ever. That's how rough it's been for Philadelphia at times. But if the Phillies had lost, God forbid, would Cole Hamels have been named the great failure of the series? The scapegoat? Can any team or society really be reduced to a King Nimrod or a Cole Hamels? Is it not all who are supposed to work for the success, or when it fails, who contribute to the failure of a particular group? Any one pitcher or team member or citizen of a country can do their best. We should try to do our best, but it also requires the rest of the group pulling the same way. No crew team can win a race if one of the eight people on the boat is not rowing, or worse, starts drilling a hole in the bottom of the boat, and does so in the name of, well, it's under my seat, it's not under your seat, why should it matter? The magic is found in those who understand both their roles in the effort and the combined work and sacrifice of the entire group towards a common purpose. Now we're going to go to the polls on Tuesday. This is a contest that has been defined by the embodiment of certain people. This has been embodied by Joe, the non-plumber, non-tax accountant, and non-official on the Middle East, though he decided to come out this week and make a statement with regards to Middle East politics. You can go find it online. I don't want to talk about it from the Bima. But he's none of these things, at least in official, licensed, or certified way. But this contest is not about Joe. And regardless of whether you like him or agree with him or not, it is not about, well, you know, it is and it is not about the candidates. It is about who wins, and so it is about the candidates, but it's also about who will take his authority as the president and understand his powers, his limitations, and responsibilities, and can best orchestrate them to lead our country. Our choice lies between Nimrod, Noah, and Abraham. And Nimrod's in our Torah portion, or is put in there by the rabbis. Noah, who is the Torah portion is named after. And Avram, I should say, who is born at the end of our Torah portion. And our question needs to come up, who will be Nimrod? The one who embodies the fears and the worst aspects of how we respond to a crisis. And his worst way of responding to it was by building the tower. Who will be Noah? The one who is willing to be told what to do and how to do it, but cares not for his fellow humans, who he will all see drowned while he saves himself and his family. Who will be Avram? The one who transforms himself, and I would even argue Avram or Abraham later on, transforms God to try and save people because he makes himself conscious and makes God conscious of righteousness. And he does so because he needs to feel a connection. The Torah will tell us that Avram was the best leader. One who knew his role in being the founder of monotheism, and the one who also knew that he was not God, but it was his role to challenge a possible injustice perpetrated by God. May we be blessed with a leader who is able to find his best balance, use his position in the wisest way, to continue to bring blessings to our great country. Shabbat Shalom.